Paul watched Black Mirror?
Yeah, he was obsessed with it.
And you haven't watched Black Mirror? Oh, you're waiting for us. No, you're not. I just had a conversation with myself. Yeah.
Nerds, welcome to episode 108 of The Unwind, a show where we talk about tech, games, gadgets, and geek culture. My name is Rob Steller.
I'm Sean Thomas.
And I'm Josiah Hills.
So, I know you just built a computer, Josiah.
But I fucked up.
Already out of date.
I should have waited 2 months.
I recently bought the 1080 when that came out, the GTX 1080 graphics card.
Yes.
Because it was pretty much the best you could get. Besides, I think the Titan was it better? No.
They released a new Titan.
A new Titan.
It was better than the old Titan.
It's better than the old Titan, but not the new Titan. Well, either way, that's out of date. They announced the 1080 Ti, which was expected to come out at some point this year.
Comes with Rubber Band Man.
It's supposedly 35% better than the regular 1080, which is a bigger jump for Ti's than normal.
How is this possible? The 10 like, series was already...
Is that like a generational jump? That's a pretty big jump, right?
I don't know.
Like, how much better is it?
Couldn't they have just done this with a regular 1080? Like, it's really that big of a deal. They're like,
Yeah, how much better is the 10 series versus the 9 series?
If I remember correctly, it was a bigger jump.
It was a huge jump.
That's what made, like, the 10 series was a big deal for NVIDIA. I think also because AMD was doing so poorly. But it was, for whatever reason, it felt like a much bigger jump than the previous. But seriously, can we just say, so this is what happens when there's no competition to a degree.
Yeah.
NVIDIA is putting out really good chips. So that's one big positive, but the fact that so they're putting out the
it's $700, and the bigger thing is it bumped down, the bigger thing for me is it bumped down the regular 1080 $100 down to $500.
Yeah.
Which is
so you're
ridiculous.
Gonna sell your 1080 before, so people haven't heard the news yet.
Yeah.
So you sell your 1080 now and then
buy two of them.
Yeah. Which, yeah, I mean, this is the craziness. So I was talking to you guys about this earlier. So the Titan X came out last year, and I think it was later, like the second half of last year. So it's been less than a year, and a $1,200 card is already made obsolete by this thing. And it just, and this Ti is $700, so it's significantly less. You could almost SLI a Ti for the price of a Titan X.
Yeah.
Like, it just feels like NVIDIA is like, we can price this whatever the hell we want because people are going to buy this shit. It's crazy.
Yeah, so they didn't save the drop in the 1070 price, did they?
I don't know. Yeah, if you think about the 1070, like,
there's going to be a Ti version of the other, the lower end ones too, right? Or mid and lower range. They usually do, I think.
Oh,
or at
like
least the mid range.
1060
ones.
Ti and a 1070.
I think that they should
do two Ti's. They do like
the 1050
Ti.
Oh, really?
And then they do. They've messed with it before, but the Ti wasn't always for. Like
yeah,
with the
weird,
900 series,
right?
Only
like
the
if there's a
yeah,
1060
what, at what point
Ti,
does it just become
a 1070?
Yeah.
Look, Josiah, it's all about multiple SKUs. Do you need 4.5 gigabytes?
Customer confusion.
The only thing I can think of is, so, and I don't want to talk about this much because actual reviews haven't come out, but AMD is releasing Ryzen, like it's supposed to actually, I think, come out today or tomorrow, and apparently the early benchmarks are strongly in AMD's favor, or at least they're besting Intel CPUs at significantly lower prices. Like they have $500 CPUs at the same level or slightly better than $1,000 Intel CPUs.
Yeah.
And the hope, I don't know if this is true at all, the hope is maybe this is also going to extend to the graphics card side, and maybe NVIDIA is feeling some pressure in that way. I don't know if that's true at all, but it just seems crazy. Like they could have priced this Ti at $1,000 probably, and people would still pay for it because that would have been what, $300 more than the 1080.
Right, right.
That's whatever. At this point, everything fuck dollars. You just
fuck dollars.
Whatever. You just do it and you just sell it for whatever you want.
Can you tell me the price in fuck dollars?
We won't go into this topic, but I thought it was hilarious. I remember reading a story a couple weeks ago about how Google was paying their self-driving car group, Waymo, those drivers so much, because now a big thing is keeping engineers, right? They're like, you have to retain them.
I saw that,
they were paying them so much that they left Google because they're like, we have so much money, we can go wherever we want.
They all have startups now with their own money.
Exactly. Like, they have all these self-driving startups, and like, they had bonus multipliers of 16, which is just like, that sounds like a video game. Like, I can't do that in Batman. I can't get a 16 times multiplier. They're getting that money. So this is fuck you money. And NVIDIA's just like, yeah, whatever. Fuck you. Pay $1,200.
That's funny.
But yeah, I think it's crazy. Hopefully AMD comes out with some cool shit. I think it's whatever. As long as if it keeps prices down, I'm happy with
that. I mean, Sean, you before the show, you kind of made a good point in that, like, there's nothing I've really done. There's nothing I try that I can't really do with my regular 1080. So there's really no point to me to get, you know, to upgrade and or sell mine and upgrade. Like, at this point, I might as well just wait till I can get a used other 1080 and SLI it for, you know, $400 or something like that.
And the interesting thing,
I was just gonna say, or invest in other things, like I don't know if it's really that much better, but like a G-Sync monitor or something like that.
Oh, I totally thought you were gonna say like a life.
Outdoor things. Activities.
Food that you don't spend it on because you're playing games. That actually makes sense, and we were talking about this earlier that G-Sync is actually something that could be useful. But I think one thing that's unique about the PC space, it feels like it's getting to this point where there's also this feeling that you just want the newest thing. You don't know why. Like, you could have gotten a 1070. Let's be real here. But you can't.
Sean, it's not a 1080. Come on.
He's got 4K. Oh, that came after the 1080, didn't it?
Well, they came around the same time. Yeah, I bought the 1080 knowing that I was probably going
to
buy the 4K.
I'm not trying to insult you. It's a real thing. I think a lot of people
have very been insulted.
Like,
this was not in the year of restraint that I'm currently in, where I've just embargoed all.
When we write Rob's biography, this is going to be a dark period. This is the dark
this
ages.
Is the dark ages.
The 1080 Ti and came out and I couldn't even
upgrade my 1080.
It's like when you saw a tree down and you see the bands that are all really close together. This is exactly what's happening for Rob.
Anyway, maybe what's gonna happen is next month Rob is gonna get a Ti somehow. We don't know how. It showed up on my door. Newegg had a rebate. It was like $20 off. It was really good.
I could not get it, Sean. Yeah.
The rebate never came in because I forgot to scan the UPC code. But whatever, man. I almost had $20 off. So speaking of money. PlayStation VR sales came out. I don't actually know how it was put out. I don't know if this was in a sales call or something like that. But apparently in 6 months of sales, they've done about 900,000 units.
That's really
good. Yeah, way better than I expected, especially... I got this feeling. I didn't know. I'm hooked on a feeling. I don't know if this is a real thing, especially because I don't own one, but it felt like they had a number of games for the PSVR. It felt like more than, say, Oculus Survive, which probably isn't true at all, but it felt like that. And it kind of made sense because Sony has all these, you know, connections to all these video game companies. It makes sense. But I haven't really heard much about the PSVR, except for Resident Evil. Since then, which I should mention that Resident Evil 7 is a PSVR exclusive. I don't know if that caused a spike in sales. But either way, it's interesting to see that they sold this many.
Yeah, it's pretty good for, it's pretty pricey accessory, right? Like, it's a peripheral. It's not a main device, standalone device. And so it's pretty good. Pretty good sales.
And I think that puts it ahead of Oculus and Vive, right?
Probably. I don't think they've released numbers officially.
I think something came out in the whole CarMack lawsuit, but I don't remember what it was. I think they've sold more than a million. I don't know.
Whatever it was at the 6 month mark, though. It's smashing that.
And it's interesting because the PSVR might go to the quote normals crowd, like the Vive and the Oculus. You have to have a gaming PC. A high end gaming PC, and you have to be able to spend $800.
Based on that, though, I kind of wonder, just if you wanted to do like a deep level analysis of what kinds of people spend what kinds of money, right? Because if you look at the install base, right? So the install base for PSVR is what, 30, 40 million PlayStations?
Yeah, and more than that. I think they're like 50.
And so you figure out like what percentage of PlayStation owners actually bought PlayStation VR versus what percentage of PC gamers who have a rig that can use an Oculus Rift, which, you know, for granted, it actually, that pool got bigger after the last F8 conference when they talked about, you know, some of the new software stuff that's letting some of the 9 series things, like 960s.
Yeah, I think it was a 960.
Can run VR too now.
So. But one interesting thing about that is I think computer or whatever, Oculus and Vive still have the people think that you need a really high-end rig, even though they've made those advancements.
Yeah.
I don't know if everybody realizes that, yeah, you can actually do it with some... A 960 isn't really new hardware by any means. No. And it was fairly... That's the low end of NVIDIA's high end. So, like, my point is it still has this aura of it's super high-end, like, yeah. Going to your point.
But I don't know, but my suspicion is that there are less people who own an NVIDIA 960 and beefier,
yeah,
than people who own PS4s. So, like, what percent,
right?
You know, what percentage of people who chose to buy PC VR experiences, even though it's more expensive, whole package, the rig plus the actual peripheral itself. All of that is much more expensive than PlayStation VR and the PS4, right? So just like I said, it's interesting to think about how people spend their money. So
can we agree Rob was right? That was the year of VR. Yeah. 2016 was a point for Rob.
Oh, thanks.
So I don't know. Either way, it's good to see. We've said this I've said this every single time. VR sales haven't been as strong as we had hoped, but there's clearly still a lot of positive, not momentum, but positive thoughts. People want to build for VR.
There's still goodwill.
It's not like 3D. It's not like the Kinect.
They haven't burnt any bridges yet.
Yeah.
I think it's more like people just need more opportunities to see it and experience it. And then, you know, they still need to make a lot more progress towards just making it more convenient and cheaper, right? So,
yes,
like, get rid of some of the cables or figure out better cable management for the stuff on PC and PlayStation and expand the content. Because with the Samsung, Gear VR, I feel like there's still a lot of, like, exclusive deals. And, you know, definitely that's the more popular one, but some of the other standalone headsets that are coming out don't have access to those specialized content, and so it starts to just holistically actually, you know, having cornered some of the special content, Samsung might actually be damaging the market as a whole.
Well, as Rob pointed out, I mean, there have been so many times where he wanted to just watch. Like, he doesn't watch the NBA, but they did a live thing, and it's all Gear
just
VR.
Just on Gear, yeah.
I assume
that's what
part
I'm getting at, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He has an Oculus and all this stuff, and so because they're paying for these exclusives, they still might be damaging, you know, the market for VR in general. It's not harmful to their own product, but it might be damaging to just other enthusiasts who want to spread the VR love.
And I'm curious to see how much of that, if at all, it's a bandwidth issue. Because 1080p, I might be wrong. I don't know if Gear VR is 1080p anymore. But considering you have to do two screens, I assume it's more than just streaming 1080p. And it has to be really good quality because you're literally up to your face. So I don't know, getting to the fidelity that a Rift or Vive is at, if it's too difficult to stream that.
Yeah.
But it'll be interesting to see, and kind of related to that, Oculus just announced that they were doing a $200 price drop for the bundle, which comes with the controllers and the actual Oculus. So that puts us more competitive. We'll see if Valve, or I don't know if it's Valve or HTC who determines the pricing, but if they change the price of the Vive to match, we'll have to see. And one last quick thing, Josiah, you mentioned you got to get more people to try it. I remember reading a little while back that Oculus is taking, they're taking the Oculus out of most Best Buy stores. Like, they had it 400 stores because
nobody's
checking
trying
it out. But I'm sure there's also a part where, like, they said something like...
It probably just feels weird to do that in the store,
that's what I
right?
feel like.
Like, people are looking at you and stuff.
I guess, but I mean, people do it at, like, trade shows. I guess everyone there is playing games, so it's not
that awkward, but
oh, I actually meant it the other way. I felt like I would be weirded out. Like, I guess you have to go up and ask somebody. It's not like Best Buy; you can just walk around and touch whatever you
it's
want.
It's not like it's just sitting there to throw on or whatever.
Yeah, because they have to have a person. But apparently, they had people. Obviously, Oculus people, and there some people would go 3 days in a row where not a single person tries it out.
Oh, wow.
So that's a big deal because that's a lot. That was a good way to get people to try it.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We'll see where this goes.
They were also caught playing it the entire time and nobody else could come up to them because they didn't know when people came. They're like, well, no one's coming anyway. It slides it on and just goes completely
oblivious. You actually have to work at Best Buy to use these things. These aren't for show. No.
I'm the demo. You watch me play.
So Rob reminded me that apparently last year I broke my rule of not talking about.
Pretty sure you said this like a week ago.
iPhone rumors. Yeah. But since I broke this rule last year, I guess I'll continue breaking the rule or just demolish the rule altogether.
So what do you think about the iPhone 9?
So first of all, let's talk a little bit about the iPhone rumors and my concept or my reasoning for breaking this rule of not talking about rumors is because basically the last three iPhones, the rumors have been very, very close to what actually came out. And even the stuff about some of the other things like the Apple Watch and some of the other devices. I'm not saying...
Well, actually, I think the watch was the one that never got out. If I remember correctly, that was the one... Well, now like watch Series 2.
Yeah, Series 2, sorry.
But the first watch, this was the interesting thing. That was the one thing that didn't leak, considering everything else leaked. But sorry, I interrupted.
No,
that never happens.
Minus a point.
But we'll see how much of this is true. But I would say like the rumors for the last one were probably 80-75% true.
Yeah.
So here are some of the rumors. Number one is the name, right? And we talked about this before. But is it going to be technically, if they keep the naming system that they've had for the last 6 or 7 years, it should just be called the iPhone 7S.
Sevens.
But and I have the sixes. But everybody seems to want to call it the iPhone 8 because they think it's going to be a large enough of a change to warrant a new number. And some people are even going as far as to call it the iPhone Anniversary Edition because it will be the 10th iPhone put out.
Right, yeah.
Or some people are calling it, because it's the 10th one, iPhone X.
They may pull Microsoft and just call it 10.
Yeah.
And they're just going to skip numbers anyway, right?
Yeah, they might. Yeah. Who knows? Shit's crazy in this world.
Imagine. They do the Anniversary Edition, but
technically that's what they did in the first place, right? They went from iPhone to iPhone 3G.
Yeah.
And even though that was like referencing the antenna that it had, they took that to being the number, and the next phone was the 3GS. So.
Oh, wait. I'm getting a hot new rumor straight from the Commentist Rumors tip line. Apparently, it's going to be called the iPhone 5G LTE WiMAX. They thought that Verizon had some great ideas with how they branded phones. They might even throw Droid in there. I don't know how, but...
Or maybe they'll call it the iPhone 2, because that's the number they skipped. They never had an iPhone 2.
We want to think back about the iPhone's history.
So that's the first rumor, is the name, that it's going to be called something other than the iPhone 7s. And then other rumors, the big one that was cycling in the last couple days was this idea that they might get rid of the Lightning connector and go USB-C.
Yeah.
They should have done that with the last phone. We talked about this.
Yeah, I would like that. I was showing Rob, because I have a connector that is USB-C into an adapter, and then it's Lightning on the other end, right? And that's
literally Lightning. You die when you touch it.
That's actually the one that comes with the MacBooks. So it's a higher charging capacity, but it also works on the iPad Pro, so it'll charge your device faster. And so that's why I got it. And so when you compare right there the USB-C part of it to the Lightning connector, the Lightning is much smaller. And on top of that, the Lightning piece, you know, it doesn't have, nothing inserts into it. So if you break that off, you just replace the wire. But with USB-C, the brittle piece or the potentially damaged piece would be in the device. So you break that, you have to replace the device. So that's one of the negatives. But the big benefit is just what the fucking U stands for is universal, right? Yeah. So if you could get back to the universal in USB, that would be awesome. And the other cool thing is that it goes, Rob likes to call it bi, but you know, it goes both ways, right? So it doesn't matter if it's on, you can flip it like top that. Or bottom. That doesn't matter. But the other thing is they're using the standard of all the devices are male and all the cables are female. So it's not sometimes you have a male device going into a female, whatever, and it's one directional. It's always, it doesn't matter. It's unidirectional. Yeah, it's unidirectional because there's only one way to plug it in.
Honestly, Apple's in a really weird place here. And I actually, this is one of those things where I don't, it's of their making, but I don't really blame them for it because Lightning was a great idea when they came out with it.
Yeah.
And now moving over to USB-C makes a lot, like it makes sense.
Right.
They can't have their computers switch to all Lightning because
right.
no one's going to make a Lightning, you know, USB stick or something.
Yeah.
And also, actually, while I'm really negative on the headphone jack removal, as much as it might be a pain for MacBook users, I understand why they went all USB-C on the new MacBooks. I get that. But now it's like, what do they do? I don't think they'll switch over to USB-C because, I mean, yeah, wouldn't they have done it last year? Because now they have Lightning earbuds out. But then again, their big push is wireless.
That's a good point,
so,
too.
But I don't know. I mean, Apple is really, really good at holding back the expected upgrade just to make the next year that much more impactful. So even though it would be unusual for them to go
is it
to a
impactful at this point?
No, I know it's marketing. It's marketing. Impactful on a marketing.
You're right. And then they're going to sell it like, oh, we thought of the greatest thing.
Yeah.
USB-C.
Wait, I don't think people are going to see it as a positive thing, though. Remember when people switched off 30-pin? Everybody hated that. And I was like, this is actually the same thing. Our friend Dave, who was on the now-deceased podcast Kiss the Crest, he got a new Pixel phone, which is USB-C. The first thing he said to us, to Rob and I, was he's like, yeah, it has this stupid new connector I got to switch. I'm like, dude, did you realize that it's reversible? In the long run, I agree, but I don't think this is going to be a positive.
Dave's not a valid person.
Do you think people like to switch to Lightning?
I think Dave's more of the average consumer.
By the way, I'm not talking about techies.
I see what you're saying.
I'm not techies will understand why this makes more sense. I think to the general public, like who liked the 30-pin switch? People, and even though the Lightning was so much better than 30-pin, people were like, oh, now I got to buy all new cords.
Yeah, but it's going to be more compelling, right? Like when somebody finally has this double-tipped USB-C cable, and they're like, oh, I can use this thing for everything. I can plug it into my computer. I can plug it into my hard drive. I can plug it into my camera. I can plug it into my phone. And that's going to happen in the next 2 years.
So my point isn't, that is 100% true. People, though, I don't think, although Apple is great at marketing, so they might be able to get people to realize it better than other companies do. The reason why I bring up Dave is because he didn't even realize it was reversible. I was like, do you realize you can just put it anywhere? He's like, oh, yeah, that is kind of nice, which is a huge upgrade, especially because micro USB is really annoying, I find. But I think Apple's really good at marketing, so they might be able to get that message across. But if it was someone else, I don't think, even though it 100% is a positive, I don't think people would take it as a positive because people don't get it initially.
So up, down, do you think they're going to do it or not?
I think so.
I don't think so. I want them to.
I
don't
really
so.
Want them to, and I think they just might. Like
well, the MacBooks did, right?
I'd say there's a 60% chance.
No, the iPad Pro isn't.
What's that?
The iPad Pro still uses Lightning, right?
The iPad Pro, yeah.
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 I mean, they're in such a weird situation.
It's the new MacBook and the MacBook Pro both have USB-C. So that's two generations in a row that they've introduced new devices with USB-C.
Yeah, yeah.
So like if they come out with the new iMac refresh and it has USB-C, I think that's
a telltale.
Well, they wouldn't go to Lightning, right? Why would they? Why would you add Lightning to? Because also USB-C can do more things because they can put Thunderbolt over it. I don't know.
Yeah,
I've been trying to power an external GPU on my iPhone for a while now. This is what I've been waiting for. But I don't think Lightning. I have no idea if this is true, but I don't know.
Lightning is very, very robust. It's just it's proprietary, so people don't build for it because you have to pay Apple to even just build for it. And then on top of that, you have to go through their MiFi certification. So it's not just you're paying them a license to build it, but you have to get your stuff certified through them, and you have to have very high quality build specifications. So it's kind of a pain in the ass. So anyhow, just to go through some of these other features. The other one is alternate, what do you call it, biometrics, right? So either one of these or both of these. So they're saying they're probably going to get rid of the home button, so the little circle at the bottom, and they are going to replace that with either an embedded fingerprint reader in the display, which they actually have a patent for.
That could be really cool.
That'd be cool.
Or they might include some facial recognition because they just bought a company that does that. Actually, they didn't just buy it, but they, you know how this stuff kind of comes out after the fact. You're laughing because it was in a Windows phone, blah, blah, blah. Nobody bought the Windows phone. Fucking Rob, deal with it.
It's just
nobody bought Windows phone.
But they're going to say it like it's their own fucking thing.
No, well,
that's what they do, but everybody who knows.
So
like,
stupid.
They're
going to do it better.
I'm not
arguing
they're
that.
Innovating. I'm saying.
But they say they are, and that's what pisses me off.
Fuck what they say.
But that's what makes it different.
But then everybody, all your fucking eye sheep are like, oh, well, all of our fucking shit, we came up with this shit. No, you didn't.
That's any product. You could say that about Xbox or PlayStation, whatever, man.
Well, I think the problem is so I think Apple, and we can get into this some other, this could be a whole topic, but I think Apple has clearly done real innovation in the past that has pushed ahead of everybody.
They were courageous when they dropped that headphone jack.
And, but the worrying thing, and we'll have to see, you haven't mentioned it yet, but another huge thing is the
list.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah, that's what I'm saying. So the next point they're going to come out, I want to see how it compares versus what Samsung comes out with and stuff like that. Because I would say one of their big recent innovations on the iPhone, to me, was, as silly as it sounds, the increase in screen size. I don't think 3D Touch really came out. Well, no, hear me out. So just hear what I'm trying to say is I don't think 3D Touch was that big of a deal. I don't see how it is. And my point of saying innovation, I guess I should have put quotes, is that was really something other people had done. So now they're going, which you'll talk about in probably a second, bezel-less screens. And I wonder how this is going to change if this is another thing where it feels kind of like what everybody else is doing. And I hope it's not. I hope it's something, I don't know what else they'll do. But I don't know. It's been very weird in recent years with Apple, honestly, since Jobs died. There's some really cool stuff that they did with the AirPods. I think they're not perfect, but there's some really cool stuff they did. But I want to see, and the biometrics thing, that could be really cool if they actually get that to work. But there's this weird feeling of they're innovating, but not, like, the touch bar on the MacBook is cool, but
I think it's a stopgap measure for touchscreen laptops, which
maybe,
for whatever reason, they're not quite ready to release that, because that's a big software release, not just a hardware release. Clearly, they, you know, it would be more expensive to source all those touch panels and stuff like that. But when you have devices like the Surface Book and the Surface,
I'm sure Apple,
you can get 13-inch and
Apple can buy what
15-inch, like, you know, touchscreen panels. So that's not the issue. It's more they have to prepare people for the change in how you use their software. macOS is not built for touch. So a couple more features. The other thing is, as Sean was saying, revolving around the screen. So the rumor is probably it's going to be an OLED screen and probably have some curved glass edges and reduced bevels.
Curved, baby.
So, I mean, that...
Which I think will be cool.
That
I really
should be
like
a no-brainer.
Yeah,
they look
both
good.
Of those should be a no-brainer. I don't know, like, what the big push behind OLED screens are. Like, do you get better battery life from that? I know they can be brighter in sunlight, but that might save battery life. I don't know.
I don't know 100%. I do know in TVs, OLEDs look a lot better. Their color reproduction is crazy. You can potentially have better battery life, although Samsung always uses OLED, and I don't think they're, like, crazy better than it, because my understanding is, since you're lighting each individual diode unlike LCD, you could have, like, the screen is off when you're displaying black versus an LCD where it still has to light it up. So you could, and that's why Windows Phone did this and some other phones did this, where they could have the clock on the screen, like the always on thing.
Yep. Right.
But I don't know if that's going to be the biggest thing. I think the bezel-less screen could be, and it seems like that's kind of the direction where phones are trying to go, and I like it. And this will also be it'll be a huge update to software, because they're going to need on-screen buttons or probably something like that, which is, because if they get rid of the button, that's a big, like, that's iconic. That is a very, unless they're just going to have an image of the button on the bottom that instead that they always have.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they can figure that part out because they've been making some moves, like even with the fingerprint reader. Basically, the way you unlock the phone is different from iOS 7 and 8. It's very different in iOS 9 how you unlock the phone.
I get more confused than I should unlocking my phone.
I think they're kind of prepping people for maybe a buttonless experience on that.
Yeah.
And then the last rumor I want to talk about is wireless charging. So they found out that I don't think they bought this company, but they were in talks with this company that does fairly long distance wireless charging. We're talking like feet, if not...
wow.
Like several inches, if not several feet.
That would be sick.
That's cool. That is awesome.
But the rumor, that was kind of a wild rumor for a while. And then they're like, no, they're still talking to this company, but probably won't be ready for production. Because I've actually seen some rumors saying that the iPhone 8 is ready to start production soon, like in the next month or two, because they're expecting huge numbers of sales. So
that stuff blows my mind. I don't get, because in my head, that means there's electricity in the air or something. Do you know what I mean? Like, it makes zero sense to me how. Again, I don't really get Wi-Fi either. So
yeah, I was just about to say it works the same way as Wi-Fi.
But, but it's like, because it's electricity. I don't know. It seems like versus data packets. I mean, it is going through waves.
That's the thing. It's a wave that is stimulating electrical responses. So it's not actual electricity moving through the air. It's not like bolts of lightning going through the air.
You can't stand between the charging and the phone itself, or else you get zapped.
It is an electromagnetic wave.
Which brings us back to the lightning port.
Stay tuned for
sure. And that's why it's sticking around, for that lightning energy. We'll see if they can pull that off, that long distance, relatively long distance wireless charging.
And that's a lot of cool things.
A lot of people are saying that even if they did that, it wouldn't be strong enough to like get the full charge on the phone. Basically, it would be a way to kind of cheat and extend battery life when you have these things around. But it wouldn't you wouldn't ever expect to just charge your phone entirely.
Yeah. That'd be crazy though if it turns into a thing and you go into a store and they
you're
getting fried.
You're just getting all these residual energy charges. Could be something.
Who wants cancer?
Or if they can't pull that off, do they like completely ignore wireless charging this time around yet again? Or do they throw in like the Qi standard wireless charging?
Yeah, I kind of feel they have to do something cool, like something that is literally wireless charging. Because the idea that you can charge just by putting it on a dock,
it's actually not that
fine.
You can't really use it though.
Yeah, like
so
it's
it
not.
Actually, like when you're sleeping, I guess it's fine because you're not interacting with it, but like you can't do anything unless you hold the.
You just put it to your face. I agree. I don't think it'll be that cool until they do something like that. The next step.
It makes a lot of sense on the watch because they do have that already on the watch. But that's just because the watch is so small and it's supposed to be waterproof and you don't want when you get to the size of the watch when you look at like the lightning connector, it's as small as it is to have a hole that size and that deep in the phone in the watch. It takes up a lot of space.
Imagine if they had the 30 pin just all the way across. Oh my god.
So so those are the rumors there.
The last thing related, I guess it's rumors, the press image of the Galaxy S8 leaked. By the way, it was leaked by Evan Blass. I don't know if you remember this guy.
He retired like 5 years
ago. Exactly. He retired.
He's still just every time.
By the way, this
time.
Is like, outside of the next iPhone, this is by far the biggest tech thing you could probably leak, and he's still doing this.
Yeah.
Now he works for VentureBeat, so he like has a regular job.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, but it's crazy that he still did it. But it looks good. It is exactly what you thought. It's using the S7 Edge idea, but they're bringing it down to the smaller phone as well. It's also mostly bezel-less. I think there is a small bezel at the top. It's not like the Xiaomi Mi Mix, which the Mi Mix was really, really cool. But I don't know if there's
what
more.
What was that phone?
Mi Mix.
No, the whole thing.
Xiaomi
The whole
mix?
Thing. You got to say it.
Xiaomi Mi Mix.
Yeah, there you go.
Xiaomi Meow Mix. Meow Mix Mi Mix. But if like the Mi Mix seemed futuristic, I don't know if there's actual constraints in how you use a phone. Like, I actually don't know around the curve if it distorts images. I remember Dave had his S7 Edge. I never really played with it, but he had a Note 7, but then he had to give it back. But it'll be interesting to see. It looks really good, but it's basically a nicer version of the S7 Edge with just no bezels. And I think they're keeping the headphone jack. The fingerprint sensor will be on the back, which is makes sense. They'll probably have a faster chip and a better camera, all the standard stuff, but it looks good.
So in the leaked images, did it look thinner to you? Not just because they got rid of bevels, but like, did it look like the aspect ratio of that LG G6, which is a more of a 2-to-1
ratio? I couldn't tell.
It looked taller and thinner to me.
Well, no, I think you're right. I think it is.
Yeah. Which I haven't used it, obviously, but I would be excited for that form factor. And if the iPhone did something like that, that'd be pretty cool. But I'm pretty sure they won't, because they're very particular about their ratios to make sure that it's relatively easy for programmers to continue just to make universal apps, basically. So I'd be very surprised if they changed the form factor much.
So breaking news, apparently Boy Genius Report got an exclusive. So this is an actual one. It does look taller than it is wide. Like, obviously.
Clearly.
What kind of phone
no,
do
no,
you
No, there
use?
Was a phone
Sean
that came
has
out.
A straight square phone.
No, they have that. There was, that was the somebody Blackberry. Put it out. Was it a Blackberry? Yeah. Oh, well, there was.
It wasn't straight up square, but.
There was one, though, that was
that
actually
Blackberry
a square.
Passport, which was like the size of a passport.
But anyway, so that's an interesting point. And also, they have different on-screen buttons, which is weird, because they haven't done on-screen buttons before. They always had the hardware key.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they totally innovated. They put a single. Yeah. I don't know where they got that idea. It was
there
brilliant.
You go. That was the square phone.
Yes.
I don't know what it is.
Was that the Microsoft? They bought them. What was it? They made like two phones, and then they went out of business.
Oh, Danger made them. The the Sidekick. It was like the follow-up to
the
Sidekick.
Nokia Twist.
The one that.
Oh no, that's not.
No,
what
no,
this
no.
is.
It was look the, up Danger.
It was like a whole,
it died so quickly.
A whole new operating system and everything. They made two phones like that, and
no, Microsoft. Like,
I think
Danger.
They pulled it in two
yes,
months
because
it
was
so
like
it was so
didn't
bad.
Sell at all. And
I want to say it was like the Kick or
can
something.
You Google it.
I don't
no,
know.
That's all right.
We'll come
all
back.
Right. We'll come back to that. All right, let's move on to the change up. Brought to you by Green Man Gaming. Get 20% off the latest games by going to the Commenters website and clicking on the banner. Change up for this week related to our main topic is, what do you subscribe to? So I think I talked about this on the show. So I was using Groove for a few years.
Yeah.
And then got a...
It was one
the
of the
Kin.
The
it was called
people.
The Kin.
Yeah, the Kin. I knew
Kin,
it started with a K and it was a short
Google
name.
Yeah, Google.
Shut
up.
Than
Bing.
Yeah, but
it is.
Bing gives me money.
Anyway, yes.
So I was subscribed to Groove. I actually stopped that because I got a 4-month trial to YouTube Red and Google Play Music. Which I think Sean is going to end up buying a... I'm stealing your answer. End up buying a family subscription for us to share. Oh, so I should say, we share subscriptions.
Sharing
right?
is caring.
Yes. Yeah. So right now, I have the PlayStation View, which I've talked about a number of times. So that $35 tier. So that allows you to watch on PlayStation and also to log into all the channels that you get, which is primarily how I end up watching anything. And then... Google Play. I think that's... No, I have Netflix, but everybody has Netflix, so I don't think that really counts. I'm trying to think if I have anything else. I don't... Oh, well, Xbox Live, PlayStation Network. I don't know if you count those in your question, but... I don't know. I think that's it.
Internet is a subscription.
Yeah.
Oh, so you have one other one you're not thinking of that is my only subscription currently.
What's
think
that?
About it. Can you guess it? I don't think you said it.
PlayStation?
No.
The...
It's the first one I think we all got, because it's one you don't think of it that way.
Internet?
No. I got the student version of it.
Office?
No.
Oh, I do have an Office subscription now.
I don't know where all my money's going. I just have Amazon.
Oh,
Prime.
Prime.
Nice.
Yeah,
which
yeah, yeah.
Prime is one of the craziest right. subscriptions ever, because it has the 2-day shipping is what pulled.
Damn,
I guess
a lot
most
of
subscriptions.
Us
in it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, it'll go into my topic. But so with that, I mean, I only use it for Amazon Video and 2-day shipping, but I would have been fine just for the 2-day shipping. Having Amazon Video is an awesome plus. And that one time I used their shitty music service or something, the regular one.
Yeah.
And although Kindle, they put out like free Kindle books or something. I don't know how that's right.
You have to use it on the Kindle itself. Like, it doesn't work on the Kindle app.
Oh, okay.
What?
You have
really?
To have I mean, they do it to sell their hardware.
Yeah.
To a degree. So I've got all the, you know, most of the ones that Rob said, Hulu, YouTube. Well, I guess he doesn't have Hulu, but not YouTube. Netflix. So I don't have any of this. Netflix, Hulu. I have the HBO subscription that we share. Obviously, internet, Amazon Prime, which a good call remembering that one. I do have some very expensive ones. I have Adobe Cloud.
Ooh, yeah. Oh, you do?
Yeah. Okay. I don't subscribe to Creative Cloud because the whole suite only makes sense if you use three of their products, but I only use two.
Oh, so Creative Cloud is all of them? And
yeah. Creative Cloud basically bumps you up to everything they have, which is really nice. But I don't really need to use everything they have, so I save like maybe... I think it's $20 or something. Like
think about how much more creative you could be.
Yeah,
if you had it,
I
though.
Could be infinitely more creative.
You
but
could
I,
be making fonts.
So, like, if there ever comes to a point where I feel like, oh yeah, I kind of need this thing, I'll pay for the whole suite. But right now, I'm just paying for Illustrator and Photoshop, and literally that's all I need. I don't use Photoshop that much. I use Illustrator quite a bit, though.
Huh.
But there was one time when I was like, oh, I kind of need Photoshop. So, anyhow. That's a big expense, and then
there's a picture of the commenters crew, and he had to Photoshop in cool people. He was just like, "Man, we can't look like this."
And then the other thing that that I'm proud to say I subscribe to is Patreon. I actually endorse three.
Oh, you do the Patreon for Patreon? They're raising money for themselves.
Yeah. I support Daily Tech News Show with Tom Merritt. And I support kind of an affiliate on that show who has his own stuff, Patrick Beja. He has one for the Phileas Club, which is really cool. He's a tech guy. He's a French tech guy, and he does have a games podcast. But his Patreon is actually for the Phileas Club, which is he puts together a panel of 2 to 3 people just from around the world, and they just talk politics. So he usually has like one main story that they all comment on, and then each one has a local story that's relevant. And it's an amazing job. Like it's really cool conversation. You get to see some hear interesting perspectives, that sort of thing. And then of course I subscribe to Roll to Hit.
Do you know what Patrick's main job is? Like, how does he have connections?
He used to be PR for Blizzard.
Oh.
And so, but he, for a long time, he had several French podcasts and then he did PR for Blizzard. But about a year and a half ago, when Patreon started getting big, basically after Tom Merritt proved that you could do Patreon and survive, he quit his job. And so he's been an independent podcaster for about a year now. And his wife is a lawyer, so
that helps. This is all kind of goes into our main topic. And actually, before we start the main topic, we might as well just announce this because this was something we were talking about before the show. And I guess this isn't exactly part of the main topic in that YouTube announced a new subscription service, so they're offering television.
Yep.
One cool thing about it is they will have all four of the major networks. It's US only right now. So they'll have Fox, NBC, ABC, and CBS. The bad news is, my understanding, there's a couple of really big channels. Like, they don't have like Turner or something like that, which is Comedy Central. There's a bunch of key ones that are missing from it.
Do they have Viacom?
Which ones are Viacom?
Like MTV?
Yeah, I think that's what's missing. Maybe Comedy Central.
Oh, that's
Cartoon Network. Yeah. Viacom.
So yeah, there's MTV, like key ones that VH1. Are missing. So yeah. and
still missing the sports channels for me too.
I think it has all the real ones.
It has all the Fox
BN.
Stuff.
Oh, it doesn't have
it doesn't
BN.
Have BN though. It has NBC. Does it have NBC Sports?
I think it does.
I don't know so. About that.
Well, the other
it definitely does not have BN, which is the one channel I definitely need.
Yeah,
so.
it had a bunch of Fox stuff and it had ESPN stuff. I don't think it had NBC Sports and definitely not BN.
The other thing, and I haven't really read too much about this, so maybe we'll see as it gets rolled out. But there are so many competing services at this time. I don't know what makes anyone's service better than the other. Some of them have, like, yeah, you can have multiple streams,
access,
which is nice.
Access is one.
So yeah, do you mean channels like that? Or
no, I mean, how do you actually get to it, right? So, like, okay, PlayStation okay. View, they have, like, a browser viewer, but it's pretty limited. Like, I don't think you get all the channels to it. So you can only really use it on PlayStation, the console. And I think one of the, you know, the boxes have the app for it, but it's not, the apps are not that good.
So that, yes, that makes a big difference. I would assume YouTube knows how to make a good app, but I don't, in my opinion, I mean, in some way they're competing against AT&T and Sling, so maybe they could find a way to win this over. But honestly, the fact that YouTube Red hasn't picked up, which still completely blows my mind. This will be a whole nother topic. Why Google is in, they are competing in areas that they should absolutely dominate, and they're not at all. But I don't know what makes YouTube TV service better than the other ones, other than, like you said, channels, but it doesn't seem like significant. It's not like you can get everything on this.
Yeah.
Pricing seems normal. Like,
I mean,
it's,
I assume they're going to expand it, right? And get more channels over time.
Yeah, probably. Like, but I mean, I was thinking about this because they announced it, and I was trying to figure out, like, what do I actually want in a subscription service for TV? And the live part of it is not that interesting to me because I really, other than sports.
Sports, so, like, is that. That's the thing. And live sports, events.
But even live events, like, I don't watch award shows and stuff like that, but those are the two things.
But how would you know if drama?
Those are the two things.
By the way,
that
was in every, like, news article. Like, I get it. It's a fun article, but man, it was everywhere.
Yeah.
But
so the only thing is I'd want to see live sports. Yeah, that makes sense to me. But you can do that for free. Like we talked about, the Super Bowl was streamed for free.
Yeah,
that,
something
that sort of thing. So like some that. Of the big events, because
the Oscars, you can get that over the air.
Yeah,
it's free.
I'm not going to watch every game, that sort of thing. So what I really want is not live streaming, but on demand.
Yep.
Basically, I want Hulu, but for, I don't want to have to wait necessarily a week or 6 months. Because there are, like, blackout periods for certain shows, not all their shows, but certain shows. And then also they only have the most recent 6 shows. So, like, if I start on episode 8, I can't go back to the season premiere. You know, that sort of thing. So, and that's actually happened to me. I was telling you guys, you know, I'm not watching Flash and Arrow this year because I got around to watching it after the first two episodes of the season were removed from circulation on Hulu. So I was like, fuck it. I
had the same thing. I was going to watch a movie, and I loaded up in January, but I just didn't get to watching it. Then I went to watch it again in February, like, to actually watch it. Yeah. And apparently that was the month at the end of January is when they got rid of that movie.
So really, that's what I want is on-demand everything you make on your station. All the content that you make, I just want on-demand. And I would even pay, so even, like, instead of, let's say, a $35 bundle for, you know, 30 channels, that's, let's say it's $1 per channel on that kind of a subscription. I'd rather pay like $3 to $5 for just the handful of stations that I want, which are namely Cartoon Network and Comedy Central.
Well, just think, like, I don't think this is going to happen at all, but potentially Google could have a situation where they own a TV service.
Yeah.
They own YouTube, which is the next version of TV. It doesn't seem like it's slowing down at all. And there is a completely different market that no one else has. They have that. And then they have a music service. Like, potentially, they have almost all forms of media.
Yeah.
Google News is also completely dominant. Like, AMP is one of the main ways. Instant Article is another popular way. But they have so many areas that they're...
Daydream, too, now.
Well, VR. But these are, like, literally industry.
Sure, yeah.
I don't see them... Even though YouTube is probably one of Google's best properties, probably because they're doing their shit on their own rather than being completely under Google. But I don't know. I don't see this service being that differentiator, even though, like, imagine you pay $40, you get Google Play music, you get YouTube Red, you get a TV service, like, it's, and, like, they give
if
you
they
a
get,
Comcast
if they get
free.
The internet here, it'll replace Comcast.
Well, yeah, fiber.
Oh, yeah.
Like, literally, they could give you everything.
Yeah.
But we'll see how it happens. I'm hopeful that it happens. I, you know, one thing to sum it up, I had two comments on The Verge, and one of them was, like, something about Trump, some insightful thing, and the other one was Typical Google, like, great ideas but poor execution. Guess which one people upvoted more, way more. It was definitely the Google thing. But what I really want to get into, so those are the side parts.
Xbox.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man, there's so much to talk about. So Xbox released, they're talking about a Game Pass. So basically, yep, it's kind of like Netflix for gaming. Basically, you will get, they said they're going to have 100 games at launch, I guess.
Yep.
And basically, you pay $10 a month, you get access to all these games. Now, you do not own them in that they switch out after every certain amount of time.
Right, yeah.
So you don't completely own them, but you will have them for a certain period of time. It's not streaming. Like, it's not Gaikai.
No, you actually
download
it.
You actually download it, so it's real. I don't know. But it could be interesting, especially if... So EA Access was a cool idea, but it was only EA games.
Right.
If this is multiple publishers, like, this could be really cool, because we talked about this is a lot of games where we might not buy, but it would be, if we just had access to it, we would totally play it. So I think that's a cool service. A lot of it, we have to wait and see what games are going to come out. Are new games going to be out on that other than first party titles?
Yep.
Those are big things, but it's cool. And who knows, maybe if they do it on Windows as well, that could be really
cool.
I think
they said they're not going
to.
Okay. Yeah. Well,
like never or just not this year?
I don't know. I'm pretty sure they had a statement saying that it's just Xbox One.
Yeah,
they may expand.
I think as soon as they can,
they will. Yeah.
Because that gives them an opportunity to compete against Steam.
But that would only apply to the, Play Anywhere titles anyway.
I would assume.
It doesn't have to. I mean, they can renegotiate those deals and just do like, you know, because it's basically anybody who wants to sign up, any developer that wants to sign up with them. So.
They could, but it depends on what they want their strategy to be, obviously.
Yeah.
If they could, you're totally right, they could do it that way. There's some part of me that sees them as they want to push this Play Anywhere. They want to get people on the Windows 10 game store, and so they're going to push that idea.
Sure.
It'll be tougher though, because a lot of people just want to publish for PS4 and Xbox. They don't necessarily, and I don't know how Play Anywhere works. Like, I thought the whole thing was that the PS4 and Xbox were very similar in architecture because they both use AMD and stuff like that. So I thought it's easy to port between consoles and then different on the PC, but I don't know, especially with these 1080 Ti's. But so that's cool. I don't want to keep talking about that because honestly, there's still a lot to learn about it. I think it could potentially be cool. But what I want to talk about is just how we're switching over to our subscription life. And what made me actually think about this was a funny thing. I was listening to an interview with the CEO of Rent the Runway. And the idea behind Rent the Runway is you pay a subscription and you get to rent dresses. And they're high-end dresses.
Right.
So it works perfectly because those are things where you only use it at a specific event and you always want to have a new thing. You don't want to wear the same dress every time. So it's a really smart idea. But one thing they were talking about, it's so funny, especially like, you know, we're not that old, but we've clearly seen this entire thing happen where when we were growing up, obviously we bought everything in a store. Now you buy a lot of things online, even clothes a lot of times. And they're apparently the Limited is closing all their stores because they just sell online.
Really?
Yeah. Because they sell more online. And so now what they were talking about on Rent the Runway is they're pushing into physical. They're not, I don't know if they're making stores, but they are going to have a physical station in high-end stores. What is it? Nordstrom?
Okay.
And it's just so funny to think it's kind of like when Words with Friends made Words with Friends the board game, where you're just like, this is hilarious. Like, they're going back to what it was,
like,
and
Dark
it feels
Souls
so funny.
Game.
Yeah, exactly. Like, these things that are just, this is where they took it from. And I thought that was really interesting to see how this dynamic, how the internet is really disrupting everything. But then there is some utility to having physical stores.
Sure.
And then how those subscriptions, obviously, we talked about, I mean, Rob, you had more subscriptions than you even realized.
Yeah.
And I could potentially do more subscriptions. Like, we're switching over to the subscription lifestyle and how it's changing the way we spend money and how it's changing the industries it works in. So, okay, we've talked about this in music, Spotify, Apple Music. They're about $10 a month, $120 a year. That it's something like buying almost like a CD a month, which is probably more than the average person.
Oh, it's definitely more than I would have bought. Like, I can think, you know, the last few years before I went into subscription services or streaming, I'd buy like one or two albums a year, and I say albums because they weren't even CDs, right? Like, I wasn't buying physical media. I was buying an album or something,
yeah,
or an album's worth of songs. So like 10 to 15 songs, singles through iTunes, you know, that sort of thing.
And so, that was a big deal with iTunes since it broke up the album.
So I didn't spend anywhere near what I spend on Apple Music.
But
I'm okay with that because I enjoy the service. Yeah. I listen to a ton of music now, and I don't have to limit my listening preferences, and I don't have to feel guilty for stealing shit or anything like that either. So.
It honestly feels like a win-win. Like, even with music, you can totally try music that you wouldn't have bought the album. You don't have to go to the store and, you know, you pick up the CD and put it under the stupid scanner thing connected to those really dirty headphones that nobody uses and want. So, like, you can try out different things. Same thing with the Xbox Game Pass. $10 a month, that's $120 a year. That's about 2 full price games. Now, I do think that most gamers buy more than 2 games, but that's still, it's consistent revenue. And I think people might still buy physical games because you don't get to keep those games. So they might buy physical games on top of this. And then even outside this, you go further out, like you just talked about, Josiah, Patreon. This has totally created its own industries. Like, people have entire YouTube channels, entire businesses just based on people spending a certain amount of money every month. Rob, you were part of the Patreon, I think, for NoClip, right? Yep. For Danny O'Dwyer.
Yeah.
He's making great stuff. And he has a video. It's exactly what you expect. He said, one reason why I left GameSpot is because it's very transparent. They need to get more clicks. They have to make more video. Yeah. They have to do exactly what they want. But now you're finding if you can get a smaller subset of people to spend that amount of money a month, you can create better content and have a...
That's the thing, right? Like, when you're ad-supported, you can say it's liberating because you get this huge crowd of people because they don't have to pay for your content. But then at some point, you start spending a lot of time and energy to handcraft this way of tricking people into clicking this stuff that is not really the content that you're interested in to begin with. And so exactly that. Can you switch to a model where, maybe not as many people are watching you, but they're engaged, they're very, they value what you're doing, they're very vocal and interact with you, and they're willing to pay for you. So I think it's an interesting model. I mean, you know, it's not, I think the early years of the internet, like after the .com boom and everything like that, like people were starting to figure out like, oh yeah, this internet thing was exactly that. Like, cast a wide open net and you expected to, you know, your tiny little website about underwater basket weaving might end up getting 1 million users because there's 7 billion people in the world and roughly half of those people are on the
internet. Remember that $1 million ad site? It got famous. Like, it sold like a 10 pixel by 10 pixel square on their website and they sold 1 million sites and so they got $1 million. And I think it's still up. It's ridiculous. First of all, it's 10 pixels, some ridiculously small thing.
Yeah.
But it was a big deal because the internet then, it was so new. You could just be...
So, you know, I think it's a different model and it's exciting, but it's also, I kind of wonder, like, what's the, so if you get in early, right, that's the trick almost, because at some point people are going to be tapped out, right? Because this is something that they pay every month
or
every fill in the blank cycle. And at some point you're just going to not be able to spend any more money because you've already allocated all your expendable income towards things that you supposedly like. And so if you don't like them as much or you don't use them as much, then it becomes kind of this rat race again of like, how do we get enough subscribers?
That's what always interests me. Like, I saw some clip where he talked about how the number of patrons or the amount of money he was getting went down, but it was buoyed by the number of average amount per user went down, but the number of users went up, which is what he wanted, because I believe that's how it worked. So he was basically seeing the same amount of money, but more people were seeing it, which is what he wanted. And that's exactly what I was thinking. Like, when he first announced it, everybody's like, oh, great. Yeah, I definitely want to support, like, Shenmue. You want to support it? Like, yeah. But then if you keep paying it every year, like, I would think people are like, yeah, I'm kind of tired. Like, I like their stuff, but, you know, do I really want to pay $5 a month? And maybe they think, oh, well, you know what? They have 500 other patrons. Right, so everybody will. It'll be interesting to see how that works. But, I mean, if they keep creating good content, like, it makes sense. I think the funny thing is people like it. Like,
you have to get in early, right? Because at some point, like, because, you know, like, I'm already at the point where I'm starting to think about, and you should always be at this point, but I know not everybody is, and I'm saying myself, I'm not, but I'm starting to get to the point where I'm really having to say, like, okay, do I use this? How much do I use this? Do I use this every day? Do I use this once a week? You know, that sort of thing.
Because you can easily have over 5 subscriptions.
Right, exactly.
I think you probably do if you include Patreon.
I have several well over 5 because I have an office subscription and stuff like that. So, I know I have many, many subscriptions. And so it's getting to the point where I have to say how much, what's the value that I get from this? Like Daily Tech News Show, I listen to that five days a week. So it's 20 times a month, times, you know, 12. I listened to that.
I knew you had a merit bias. I was wondering
that is a lot of hours that I listened to it. And so I'm happy to pay. I think I recently upped my subscription to $25 a month. Because and if you stop and think about it, that's more than Netflix and that's more than Hulu.
Yeah.
But if I'm honest,
Netflix, watch out. Tom Merritt's coming for
but
you.
But I give
he's
more hours.
He's got your size backing.
I give more hours to that show than I watch in Netflix and Hulu and HBO combined.
Well, so I mean, these all go into. It's interesting because now, so the internet killed the value of all content because everything was either free through ads or it was extremely cheap, like 99-cent. Apps, 99-cent songs. But now people are kind of going back the other way. It's like, I'm willing to pay this much because I like this stuff. Yeah. What
if we get to the point, this is Black Mirror episode. What if we get to the point where everything we do is tracked and everything we use is tracked and basically you pay, like, no matter what you do, you pay like $200 a month and that gets distributed based on what you do.
I'm sure there's some going person on your, trying on to your be thing, that
right? Right. Yeah. Going on what you were saying in that, oh, it makes sense that I pay twice as much because I'm spending
it's like
roughly
an electric
twice
meter,
as much
right?
Time.
It's like metered billing rather than...
Right, right.
Imagine you pay a subscription to get access to all the subscriptions. So you pay $50 a month, you get Netflix, you get Hulu, you get Apple Music. So you just have everything. Another thing that made me think about this, Ben Thompson, who writes for Stratechery, he is much, much smarter than I am. If you want to read up on a higher end thoughts on this and how literally the industry's fully changed, and he has some really interesting stuff on the unbundling, but he has some really interesting points. So he runs his blog, and it's $10 a month, $100 a year. And what he did was he puts out one article a week for free. And if you pay, you get the daily update, which obviously every day he puts out something new. The podcast is free. And like I said, the regular weekly thing is free.
Sure.
And so his point was, so it works out in a lot of different ways. So the way when you work for a normal publication nowadays, it is all about quantity. You have to put out this many posts so you can put out more things that have ads on it. And you just have to post and post and post. With him, it's literally the opposite. He can spend as much time as he wants, and he actually wants it to be less content because if he said if he started with doing a bunch of things at once, he would get burnt out instantly. But now that he can just do one a week or one a day, people can read it. They can digest the whole thing. He does it long-ish. It's like 1,500 words, so it's really not that long, but it's longer than just a tiny article. And he does real insight. He does some unique things that differentiates himself. It allows people to kind of take it in and think about it and then spread it. And it totally works. He hasn't burnt out on it. He still has a lot of ideas and it's working real. Apparently it's he thought it would take about 5 years to get profitable. It took him 1 year.
Wow.
He's doing well. He's for whatever it's worth, like, he's located in Taiwan, so he's not even in America. Like, he's not in getting direct news, he's just analyzing it. And so what he said, which makes sense with a lot of things, just like Daily Tech News Show, you can find a niche, unlike what you thought the internet was. The internet was about democratizing everything. So, well, it was democratizing, but it was also access to everyone. But there now it's going in some ways the opposite way. It's like, look, if I can just get a bunch of people to pay that really want what I want.
Yeah,
I have,
exactly. Because when you realize back in the 90s and early 2000s, like, oh, pretty much I could reach anyone in the world with the internet. That was the temptation to, like, I want to reach everyone in the world. But, you know, that's silly. But you can reach a million people. And if those million people pay you a buck each, you're a millionaire every year, right? So that's the idea. So you get these really passionate niches, and you can do okay, apparently.
And everything's inherently global. I mean, think about it not that long ago.
Well, that's how you get that niche of a million people, because there's not going to be a million people in, you know, in Nashville, Tennessee that want to listen to you, right? But
PewDiePie is, he's Scandinavian. I don't remember exactly what country. And when he first streamed, he was in Italy. Like, I mean, Europe is obviously a very big continent, but... you know, it's not exactly what you'd expect to be the biggest YouTuber of all time.
Yeah.
It's interesting. There's a lot more to think about. It's interesting how subscriptions are fundamentally changing the way we pay for things and we're buying. Like, when's the last time you bought a DVD or a Blu-ray? Like, people are buying less physical things and paying more for subscriptions. And we'll see how this plays out, because I feel like it could be a situation where the amount of money going into the system is higher, and the music industry, my understanding is they're finally on an upward trajectory. It's not at 90s levels yet, but the 90s were crazy. People were buying so many CDs, it was insane. But it is definitely going up, and it's taken a while to get there. There's one last point I wanted to say, and this could be a whole nother podcast, but one other interesting thing is a lot of the players in it are companies where their main business isn't that content, and it changes things. Amazon, Google, they sell other things so they can undercut other people by taking a loss on those services.
Yeah.
Even Apple, like as far as I know, Apple Music is doing well. It has a lot of subscribers, but even if they're taking a loss on it, who cares? If it gets people to buy more iPhones, that's where they're making their money.
Yeah.
So now everything is an ecosystem play nowadays. Microsoft is doing this Xbox Pass, so they get more Xboxes. Like that's fine. So,
well,
but
I mean,
that
Apple
changes,
Music.
Though.
I think it is profitable. Well, I can't say that for sure, but I think it's pulling in a lot of revenue, and with that one in particular, because they have to pay for the licenses, that's the one Apple service that's on Android as well.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because they're not messing around. That's how serious they are, and it seems to be paying off, because each conference quarterly business call that they do, they keep saying that revenue from streaming services, which includes Apple Music, is just going up and up and up.
And what's interesting, the parallel to that is Spotify. And while Spotify still has better subscriber numbers, my understanding is the company itself isn't that healthy. It's a popular product. I don't know where investment's going to come from, but like, Apple Music is probably turning a profit. Their services department
maybe not
well.
A profit, because I'm not sure if any music service is turning a profit, but it's not.
Even if they break even, like Apple, they're making
they're
a
not
couple
just
billion
throwing
dollars
away
in other
money
places.
Because they're making back a lot of revenue very quickly.
And so it changes the way all of this stuff works, which has pros and cons. Like it's kind of good for the user to a degree, but it also changes that maybe companies like media focused companies, maybe they'll have more problems. Who knows?
Yeah.
There's a lot of things to think about, but I think subscriptions have, in a weird way, creeped up on us quickly. And subscriptions are kind of everything now.
They've been around for a while in the digital area. I mean, like, obviously there were magazine subscriptions and cable subscriptions, but in digital, they've been around for a while, but they really exploded in, I'd say, the last 3 years. Yeah.
All right. That is going to do it for this week's episode of The Unwind. Thank you so much for listening. You can subscribe to us on the iTunes, Google Play Store, and Stitcher. You can find us on YouTube by searching for The Commentist. Please share.
How much does that subscription cost, Graham?
It's $1 million. It comes right to our pockets. Thank you very much.
Just need one person out of 7 billion people. Yes. Just one person.
If you are that person, we will love you forever. You can share us with your friends. Please leave us comments. You can submit questions and topics directly by going to the unwind.audio. Also, be sure to check out all of the great shows on The Commentist,
We might be coming out with a new website soon, too. So
this is true. And a new app on Android.
We're going all out. We were serious about the subscription thing. In order to access our website and our app, you have to pay $1 million a month.
Check out our other shows. Roll the Hit, Beard of Vegans, Sky on Fire, Unwind. See
not
you next
Kiss
week.
The Crest, not Prayer Hands Emoji.
No, those are gone.
Guys, we didn't even talk about the Switch today.